Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Fantastic.
It's beautiful weather out there these days, I must say.
Yeah, it's getting kind of hot. I'm looking forward to winter.
Yeah, at least fall. Summer over yet?
I'm missing my toques.
Well, first thing is in the morning, it gets a bit chilly.
Yes, yeah.
So you can turn the air conditioning off.
Well, I was so fogged up this morning from, well, not fog, it was dew. The car was so covered with dew. And when you first start driving, it takes a while until you get it moving enough to mm-hmm. get the dew off. It's like your wipers, they just mist up again. It's like, what's going on? So I had to turn on the heat in the car this morning so I could see out the windows.
Bah. Seeing out the windows is for chumps.
See, if it was snow, I could just brush it off and I'm done.
Right? We have in each of our cars a small shower squeegee.
Yeah, I do too. I got a shower squeegee.
Because some days you get in, there's not just your windshield.
It's your side windows.
Your side windows and your side mirrors and all that are all. So we just do a quick little doot-doot-doot with the shower squeegee, get everything all nice and cleared, and off you go.
It does work. I've had one in the car for years.
Yep. Yep.
It does work.
Good times.
Your side window windshield wipers. Side window wipers.
Yeah, but it's kind of hard.
Not automatic, though.
When you, yeah.
Yeah. Highway
tell
speeds.
Somebody to get out
reaching
there.
Reaching out highway speeds to clean squeegee your side windows.
Yeah, it just doesn't work.
Crawl out through the sunroof. Get my side window for me.
Can you lean out your window and my windshield wiper's broken? Take this squeegee to my front window. But no, it's nice to nice and relaxing in the mornings and the evenings. It's just that nice, perfect, relaxing temperature.
Exactly, yeah.
Where you can sit and read or work on the computer out on your porch, watch all the birds and squirrels and people passing by, hurl insults at your neighbor, throw things, watch the raccoons destroy things.
And the skunks dig up your
mom. And the skunks threatening your dog. Oh, it's great. Why do we love summer again?
I know, right?
What's going on? Soft water season, that's why.
Soft water season.
You had something to talk about.
Oh, no,
I came across.
It was just something I came across. I thought it was funny. It's not worthy of a whole segment, but
Derek's going to talk about this for the next 52 minutes. I'll talk to you all next week.
The whole show is just this.
The whole show, 52 minutes on this.
No, it's just something I came across. I cannot say the name of this town, but it's
Brattleboro. Sounds like it got a mouthful of marbles.
I know. Like, who names a town that?
Brattleboro.
Like Peterboro. Anyways, State Trooper Radio dispatched about a construction flagman that used what appeared to be a kayak paddle on Route 9 out of Brattleboro. He wasn't wrong. The signsman had been directing traffic when he lost his sign in the river. He found a carbon fiber Werner paddle wedged into a guardrail. So he lost his sign. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, this'll do. So he found a Werner carbon fiber shaft orange paddle on the paddle. And so he used the orange paddle as a sign to slow and stop traffic because it was one lane across the bridge. And so the paddle, bright orange blade, it worked better. Drivers actually slowed down. The paddle serial number matched the theft report filed by a woman in Keene. So apparently water stole her paddle. Not Anyways, so 40 miles upstream. So they got the paddle back to her. She drove down to collect it. And he said, Dennis Farrell, the 63, the guy who was directing traffic, he bought three more paddles so he could direct traffic. I don't know if he's buying it for directing traffic, but he bought more paddles because
it works better and it doesn't get him run over.
Exactly. I don't know what kind of flags he was using, but if the paddle's better, hey, if it works. I just thought that was so funny.
The big word stop on the orange sign doesn't work as well as a
exactly.
You know why they're stopping? Because they're looking at this kook in the middle of the road.
Waving a paddle.
Does he need help? Let's just stop and find out. And he's standing there with this paddle. You shall not pass. That's awesome.
It worked.
Yeah, things like that.
I thought that was so hilarious.
So did she just lose, it doesn't say, does it? Did she just lose the paddle, or was there a kayak involved in the theft as well?
Well, I don't know. She all it says is they traced it back to a woman who reported the theft of her paddle, but if it was lost in the river and it was wedged in a bridge 40 miles away, I assume maybe floodwaters took it. It wasn't a theft. It wasn't a theft. It was
a Poseidon.
Exactly.
Those thieving gods.
Exactly. When we did the East River part of the Venus Link, we're paddling up the East River, and we found a stand-up paddleboard paddle, which was, I had to climb out an embankment and up a tree to get the paddle. It was in a tree above the river.
Somebody was using it wrong.
Very wrong. But it was. But we found a lot of broken up canoes and kayaks and stuff like that along the route. So there was a big spring thaw that year. What was 2019. And so we found a lot of debris in the river, stuff that was just, we found inflatable ducks and whatever. It was like a lot of stuff went into the river and got washed down. Anyways, I have a nice, it's got a clasp and you can extend the standard paddleboard paddle. You can go from like whatever to whatever, like you can, full length is like 6+ feet long for a very tall person, adjustable. But it's really nice paddle. I'm really happy I found it.
Funny you should mention stand-up paddleboarding.
Oh, really?
For my daughter's birthday, her friends over in Japan pitched in, and they bought her a stand-up paddleboard.
Oh, yes. You were telling me about this. That's awesome.
So when we were over back in August, we did some canoeing with this one company and had a great day out. And she was talking to her friends and goes, why don't we all go canoeing? So she booked for six of them, plus the guide, to go out canoeing for the day. And all her friends were, and they went out there, and they all went canoeing. They all had a blast.
Nice.
They had a stand-up paddle board, so a couple of them tried it. At least one of them went into the drink.
Yes.
And he was sitting there, same guy that we had when we were there last year, really nice guy. And he's going, why are you guys canoeing? Canoeing's for older people.
Really? I was unaware of that.
That makes two of us. He says, at your age, you should be whitewater rafting with us.
Well, there you go.
So for these other five people who were, I don't know if we want to go canoeing. All of their faces apparently lit up when he said, you guys should all come whitewater rafting with us.
Okay.
So apparently they want to now that she's got them into canoeing, they want to try stand-up paddleboarding and whitewater rafting.
Right on.
Right?
Start a revolution.
That's it. Over in Japan, get everybody out on the water now.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. We she just did that on the last weekend there, and was quite happy that everybody, because she wasn't sure, right? It's just like if you take people out, I don't know if I want to go canoeing. I don't know if I'm going to like it, or we'll come out for the day. We just go up a river.
Yep.
I got all the gear you need. Bring a spare pair of clothes to leave in the vehicle. Bring some sunscreen, bug spray, a hat, a snack. Water.
Yeah.
We'll go out and paddle the river. You'll have a blast. Well, I don't know. And then they get back and you're like, oh my God, that was so much fun. We saw this, we saw that, and the turtle. Yeah. And
Same deal. Both my kids are like that. It's like, hey, we're going to go do this. No, I don't want us. Like, and we've learned over time, doesn't matter if they like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Once they get out doing it, it's like, oh, well, that was fun. Did you like that? Yeah, that was good. It's like, and you didn't want to. And they get grumpy because you called them on
it. Because you called them on it, yeah.
But yeah. I thought you didn't like it. It's like, wah, wah,
wah, wah. I used to have a buddy like that, trying to get him out of the house to do something. And then when you finally
get him out.
Absolute blast.
Yep.
Loves it. Best thing since sliced bread. Can't wait to do it again. But the next time we go to do it again, I don't know. And eventually it comes to a point where we're going. You coming? Well, okay. See you. Bye.
I'm not going to fight you every time.
Wait a minute. Where are you guys going?
Wait, how come you're not trying to make me go?
Yeah. So, yeah, so she's got five friends now that want to do all this paddling stuff
that's awesome.
With her. So that's how it starts.
Yep, absolutely.
That's how it starts. Yep. And they're all going to get into this fantastic group of paddlers, and she's going to come home. All right, see you, suckers.
Yeah.
I got you into it. Now I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Ah, but good. Good for her. Good for them. Glad they enjoyed it and got a few pictures there of them, and yeah, looked like they had a good time.
Right on.
Yeah. They use the, like, the Old Town canoes and stuff. Like
do they?
That. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Hmm.
Easy peasy.
That's kind of wild. It's, you know that all this stuff goes on all over the world, but then when you hear about people in other countries trying something for the first time, it's like, well, this is interesting. This is, mm-hmm. you know, like for us, it's, well, I don't know about the younger generation, but when I was growing up, it was like every school that I've been in had some sort of canoe or kayak thing going on, right?
Yeah, see, we did. Well, I grew up in different, I grew up in military schools too.
Yes. So yeah.
We didn't really have, we were just outside all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah. But mind you, having said that, though, when I was in North Bay, they had, like, the outdoor clubs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was more like hiking and camping and
not
really paddling. They sort of kept us off the water.
We've done a...
I don't know why.
I can't remember what... I can't remember what grade it was, but it would have been junior high, maybe. But we did... We did a couple trips. We would go, up to and do the Kennebecasis River. We a multi-day trip. It was a had chaperones and stuff like that. And I can still remember it as like the first night. One of the kids had steaks with him, and he barely slapped it into the frying pan over the fire. And it was the best steak I've ever had. I still remember that steak. And I also remember a giant duffel bag with a 2-4 in it, rolling along the bottom of the river as we're paddling above it, saying, can you grab it? Can you grab it? Can you grab it? We never got... It was a duffel bag full of beer.
Full of beer.
Rolling along the bottom of the river.
It's like Whiskey Rapids in Algonquin. Apparently a bunch of whiskey barrels went over.
Oh. Is that why it's called that?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Makes you wonder to this day if there's anything still down there.
Could be. No, no, no. Wouldn't be. Wouldn't be. I did... Me and a bunch of guys from work, we did the Petawawa River. This was probably about 5 years ago. And so it's a mix of a lot of whitewater, but flat water too. And it was below a section of whitewater. We eddied out, and it's like, hey, what's that floating? Hey, is that a can of beer? Look, there's another one. So we found three cans of beer. It's like, whoa.
Yeah. They're cold.
River beers. So we paddled for a while, and it was the proper thing to do. Had to get it out of the river, but we did drink them.
Right.
And so we did, look, you know, your bottom, the cupped bottom of a beer can, if it went through winter, it's going to be expanded.
Yeah.
It wasn't expanded, so it was a fresh that year beer. So it's like, hey, this is awesome.
And nature shall provide.
And nature shall... We were like 4 days into the trip. We were like ready for a nice cold beer.
Well, we did Woodland Caribou, and we were at least a week and a half in, maybe more.
Yeah.
And we went to on one lake. There was a lodge, and we were sitting there looking for... And it was hot, so hot that day. We were looking for one of the portages. Now, the portages there aren't... There's like, you look for a blaze or you look for a little pile of stones on the shore. There's no sign saying, hey, portage over here, it's, everybody.
On the map, it's supposed to be here.
It's we know it's supposed to be over here somewhere.
Might do some bushwhacking.
And there was a couple guys that come up, you know, motorboat.
Yeah.
And they were at the lodge. And then we told them what they were doing. They thought that was the most awesome thing in the world. 3 weeks canoeing, portaging through Woodland Caribou, you know, to get to this one lake to meet up with a bush plane to take us out.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we're going to be here for a little bit, stop and have a snack, and then do the crossing. And they came back with beers. Ice cold
ice
beers.
Cold beer.
And it's like, oh, so good.
And it's so different, so wild to suddenly it's like, what?
Right?
We did this when we did the Wabakimi. When we did Wabakimi with Burt Reynolds' Memorial River Run, we got into Whitewater Lake, and we were a couple days into the trip. It was hot. The place where we wanted to stay, there was like, it was a, there had been a couple years of low water.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get a high water, which we experienced, it was high water, all of those mosquito eggs suddenly are submerged. And so they all hatched. And it was a wicked, oh my goodness. Like, you couldn't run into the bush to go to the bathroom because there's so many mosquitoes. So we all ran back out into the lake, stood in the lake up to our chest to get away from the mosquitoes. And it's like, okay, Derek, you can email people, right? And text people. I said, yes. There's that Thunderhook or whatever lodge across the way. So I messaged them, messaged the head office, and it says, hey, you got to, what do you got? And they said, well, go over and talk to them. So we went over, talked to the young guy. He got on a sat phone, and right there on the beach, we booked a cabin in the middle of this whitewater trip that we were doing. We booked, I think we did we do one night? No, we did two nights. We did two nights, and with that booking, we got a boat and everything. We went fishing, but what was great, he's like, we said, hey, do you have beer? He says, oh, it's really limited supply out here. But he did bring us some beers. And it's like, in the middle of this trip, it's like, oh, this is sweet.
Right? A nature shall
provide. I might be remembering that incorrectly. I'm sure Mike Burns will correct me when he's listened to this week. But I'm pretty sure, like, the guy was hesitant at first as we were booking. He's like, hey, do you have beer? And he was super hesitant. I can't remember, but I thought he did give us a couple beer. Oh, wait, no. You know what? That was the outfitter that flew us in. He brought beer to our cabin. The guy on Whitewater wouldn't give us beer.
But somebody else brought it in for you.
No. It was the first guy when we flew out that gave us beer. We had beer and ice on the first night and the last night, I think. But on that lake there, but it was neat to, he's on the sat phone. Can we book it? I'm using my credit card over a sat phone to book the cabin. It was so wild. It's like, this is perfect.
Right? Just weird things happen.
We had a vacation in the middle of our vacation. Yeah. It was glorious. It was glorious.
Okay, canoe trip part two.
It was nice.
It's like
really
a pit
nice.
Stop.
It was, and it was, that's where the center of the universe is. I can't remember the guy. The guy, he had a patent on Bic pens, and he built the center universe out on Whitewater Lake on an island. And he spent like 30 years there building cabins, and he's a really good woodworker. And
a patent on the Bic pen?
Yeah, he had some. He was a co-partner in the patent for the ball and the Bic pen.
Really?
So he made a lot of money, and he spent his life living on this island. And he had wrote papers and something. He's called it the center of the universe. This island where he lived.
I don't think I ever heard of that.
Oh, it's middle of nowhere. I'll have to look it up for you.
Oh, now I'm going to have to look it up. Great.
I don't have all this information.
Well, I hope everybody enjoyed this episode. It's over now.
There's a lot of people that are saying, I know about that guy.
And then there's a lot of people going, hang on a sec. I got to go down a rabbit hole here.
Google Whitewater Lake, center of the universe. And it'll come up.
All right. This episode is 18 minutes long. See ya.
Wabi Kimi, Whitewater Lake, center of the universe.
Cool.
It's there. Trust me.
I'll believe you.
This guy is an eccentric guy, and he made a lot of money on his Bic pen patent. He was American. He was Canadian. Okay. Yeah.
I won't hold that against him. Speaking of Americans.
I know just enough to be dangerous. Not enough to be useful. I don't know my details.
I know enough to be interesting, but not...
I don't have details.
I know something happened, but I can't really tell you what. Something happened that had
to
do with
beers
and pens, but...
I'm here to create interest. I'm not here to give you detail.
I open the door, you have to walk through it and see what's on the other side.
Precisely.
Right? Hey, you're such a wiener.
I've had a lot of concussions.
Way too many concussions. Speaking of Americans and America, do you know there's a drought emergency in Colorado?
I thought I heard something about that.
Mm-hmm. After Governor Jared Polis' drought emergency announcement earlier this month, many Coloradans may be wondering what it means for summer fun on the water, especially as rafting season's ramping up.
Coloradans?
Coloradans.
Not Coloradians.
Coloradans. Coloradans.
Okay, Coloradans. I'll go with it.
Yeah. Coloradans. Coloradons. Coloradans.
Colorodians. Anyways, sorry, I just sidestepped.
Yeah. Right now it's going to be stuck in my head all day. Tomorrow at work, Coloradans.
Just doesn't sound
right. Just doesn't sound right. It's like some days you say a word and it just doesn't sound right. Colorado Springs Utility says the region is facing serious dry conditions. All the watersheds in which our water comes from are in severe or extreme drought, says Julia Gallucci with the utility. Officials expect water yield this year to be 41% of average. Oof. That is, yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's super low.
Raising concerns about both short-term conditions and long-term supply.
Do they have a lot of hydroelectric? They must have hydroelectric in Colorado.
Despite low water projections, outfitters along Arkansas River say rafting trips are still moving forward. Andy Ninus with Echo Canyon Rafting says companies prepared to run trips throughout the summer thanks to longstanding coordination between Colorado Parks and Wildlife and the commercial river industry. So that gives guides and outfitters the ability to adjust itineraries and make accommodations for varying water levels. So, of course, the story this year is drought, but in a lot of years, the story is an abundance or overabundance of water. Colorado Springs utility leaders say recreation can continue, but the bigger issue is what drought means for the future. Long-term planning currently leaves the city with nearly 3 years of water in storage, but they expect the supply to decline this year. Officials are urging customers to start conserving now, focusing on simple fixes that can make a noticeable difference. Gallucci says checking for leaks is one of the biggest opportunities for conservation. Making sure you don't have any leaks inside or outside your home, which impacts 8 to 10% of our customers at any given time. That's a huge opportunity to save water. Another key step following local water-wise rules, which limits outdoor watering to 3 days a week. I know there's people in our neighborhood that water like first thing in the morning and then every evening.
Yeah.
Like that's a massive use of water.
It would be, yeah.
And the other thing you got to think about, if they got 3 years of water and it's a drought and you start losing that 3 years and next year's a drought, then you start losing and the next year's a drought.
Exactly. So, right. And this is one of the things where people don't really, let's say politicians or whatever, don't really appreciate the fact that there needs to be rules on mm-hmm. protecting waterways because right now it seems like we got a lot of water, but that could change overnight, right? That could change from year to year. And so if you're counting on a certain watershed for fresh water and permafrost starts melting and you get high metals and bacteria in your water like they do up north mm-hmm. or here in Colorado, low water levels where it's like, hey, we don't want you guys even water your lawns. It's like, well, you know, maybe we should be protecting our waterways a little bit more instead of randomly saying, no, we can dump whatever you want. Just dump it in the river. It'll go away.
We have called our stage this year Water Shortage Preparation. So it means we are not looking at just this year, Gallucci says. We know our storage has to recover in the following years. So, yeah, you picture all the whitewater rafting and all that sort of stuff in Colorado, but there's a drought emergency. 41% of normal.
But there's a few states that are experiencing this. Like, we all know about Nevada and...
all the West Coast.
Yeah. And I sent you... that video of it showed the different water levels with the woman and husband who visited the same site.
Mm-hmm.
Showed her at one point touching a rock and kept showing the same rock over years.
Was that Meade or Powell?
That was Powell.
Powell.
And it's like, that's incredibly low.
Yeah. Yeah.
Incredibly low. And to think about that kind of water level change, how many millions of gallons of water that is.
Well, I mean, one minute you're sitting there right next to the shore, then like years later, you're that same spot and all of a sudden you're at the bottom of a cliff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like
the water level has dropped 30, 40 feet. How is that possible?
Yeah. So keep an eye on the water, people.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. New Brunswick.
I don't know. I wouldn't call myself Mr. New Brunswick.
Mrs. New Brunswick.
I'm from New Brunswick.
You're from New Brunswick. There's a new map from Fredericton Capital Region Tourism designed to get more recreational paddlers on the water in a safe way. You're going to New Brunswick this summer, are you not?
I am. Or
this month? Next month?
Yeah, in a few weeks.
Yeah, a few weeks you're heading there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Are you taking a canoe?
No, I am not.
Why?
Because it's a family reunion.
And... I'm making a beer run. See you in 4 hours.
Well, I am, since you brought this to my attention, I knew about the website for...
There's one for all of New Brunswick, but this is a newer one.
So they've added to the provincial website, and they've added... So Tourism Fredericton has added a segment just for their segment of the province.
Mm-hmm. The Woolastook...
Woolastook. Some of these words in New Brunswick, I can pronounce. If you look at a map in New Brunswick, there's a lot of weird...
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of weird natives like Penobscot and Quispamsis and...
Do you say Ormucto or Oromucto?
Ormucto.
Ormucto. Roussegonis?
What?
Or Roussegonis?
What?
Roussegonis or Roussegonis?
Neither.
What do you mean neither?
I've never even heard that one.
Well, that's why you never say it. Nepesquit River?
Roussegonis. Nepesquit, yeah.
Yeah.
Oromucto.
Yeah, there's all these big words.
Yeah, well, it's all native, right? It's a lot of native words are in New Brunswick. So they've named a lot of rivers and roads and cities and towns and stuff like that.
So Woolastook. Stook.
Woolastook.
Stook. Watershed Paddling Trails website provides canoeists and kayakers with key information about different paddling routes so they can plan their trips, learn more about new routes they haven't taken yet. Dave Seabrook, the director of Fredericton Capital Region Tourism, says a website highlights recreational paddler day trips of 1 to 6 hours, and there are currently 23 routes on the site with more to come. There's an incredible paddling heritage in New Brunswick and the capital region, says Seabrook, and the organization wanted to provide paddlers with specific information about launch points, nearby amenities, restaurants, campgrounds, to give them confidence to explore new paddling areas and ensure which routes are safe. And it's good for tourists as well who are thinking, hey, we're going to New Brunswick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's do
on a family reunion thing.
Exactly.
Largest route listed on the site is called the Canadian Heritage River Route, which is 110 kilometers long. How many hours do you need for that, Jerry? But this route is an anomaly on the website, as most routes are for small segments. Route can get windy and is aimed at more experienced paddlers, but for those who are newer to the sport, the site highlights some hidden gems, such as paddling routes in Roussegonis and Oromucto. Jordan Fournier, the president of Canoe Kayak New Brunswick, says the majority of people in the paddling community are aware of these routes and more interested in finding challenging paddle experiences like Nepesquit River in northern New Brunswick. He really likes that Fredericton map provides more access to people who are new to the sport. And eventually, once the newer people get into the swing of it and figure everything out, they'll go to the more challenging routes as well.
And really, it's knowledge of paddling routes comes down to how much people get engaged with that kind of sport or paddling or whatever. Because if you don't know that the routes are there, you're obviously not going to do them, right? And so it's great that they've compiled these into, and it gives route info, and there's a lot of details that are there. So I think this is fantastic. And like the whole province has had a website for paddling. We've covered it a few times. We've covered some traditional migratory routes and, and whatever that they're rediscovering. But this here is, this is super interesting that they've, Fredericton has come up with this.
Yeah. Fournier is also a big fan of the fact that the map includes information about seasonality, difficulty, and route type. He says water safety is incredibly important when it comes to paddling. You don't want an novice paddler that's just getting into the sport to go paddle class 3 whitewater. He says they're probably going to get hurt or worse. Having the ability to select appropriate skill set level trails is important. Seabrook says the map has been in the works for almost 3 years. When he first started, he thought it would be easy, but his team ended up validating every route by paddling it themselves to ensure it was appropriately coded by a difficulty in the system. And while Seabrook has had a canoe for many years, he was the type of paddler who enjoyed going out on the lake for half an hour. But about 5 years ago, he did this stretch from Nashwauk River, from Marysville Heritage Place, down to the mouth of the Wolastoq, or the St. John's River.
The St. John River.
John River is the same thing. Seabrook said he was blown away by being immersed in nature while still being in the city. Well, that's what Jeff, when he did his maps, Jeff McMurtry, he paddled a lot of it.
He
just
did.
To double check things.
Hey, yeah. And good for him for doing that research. And this is to the people who did this website, I assume they were being paid to paddle these routes. It's like, huh, interesting.
Okay. Probably not.
Well, no, if it's for the provincial, if it's for the capital region of Fredericton.
Oh, the tourism, yeah. Yeah, maybe.
They probably get paid to do these routes. I need everybody out to paddle these routes. I got to make sure that it's safe to go. I need an idea of where the risks are and the hazards.
Imagine getting paid to just go and paddle.
People get it done. It happens.
Apparently not us.
Not us, no. No.
Good gig if you can get it. The tourism part of my brain just went off and said, we have to do something with this. Like, this is an asset that we need to tell the world about. Now, with the induction of this map, he said Fredericton is ready to welcome people from all over the world who want to experience its waterways. Sometimes as New Brunswickers, Seabrook said it can be easy to forget how much we have in terms of our access to nature so close to the city. And that's important these days. When you go out for a couple hours and you're seeing dozen eagles, a couple of herons, and a beaver, that's pretty amazing stuff if you're from the big urban center. This is a legitimate part of our lifestyle here in New Brunswick. Paddle Wolastoq.
Wolastoq.
But there's an A after this one. Wolastoqwatershed.ca. Paddle Wolastoqa watershed.ca. That's the website where you can find everything. Paddle by the Water Trail. So there's a tab there called Paddle by Water Trail. You click that and it brings you to all this information. You can choose like seasonality, all seasons or just spring. Difficulty, beginner intermediate or advanced. Route type, Great River Run, Lakes and Loops, Signature Route, Canadian Heritage River Route. And then it lists all 23 routes that you can click on. So if you don't choose anything, you just leave it all blank.
Yeah.
You can scroll down and it lists
see all of them.
All 23 routes. So I decided to look into it and I chose the Keswick River. Keswick River is a twisty, fun ride for intermediate paddlers on a narrow river with a consistent, gentle current. This route, with dozens upon dozens of twists and turns, is a beautiful nature tour through the Keswick Valley with its traditional agricultural landscapes with lovely wooded sections.
My mom used to take us to Keswick to pick strawberries every year so that she could make jam.
Really?
It was a family outing. We'd go out and pick your own strawberries. We'd come out back with gallons and gallons of strawberries.
Sounds like child labor, if you ask me.
That's why people in the rush have kids, because you need kids to pick the weeds and rocks from the garden and clear out the garden in the...
Shovel the lawn and mow the driveway.
It's harvest time, kids.
Right? Many sandy beaches along the way make for great picnic stops and are home ground for sandpipers. The route is frequented by many eagles and herons. River is good fun for most paddlers.
Use the word most?
Yeah. The river is good fun for most paddlers, but the sandy banks mean there can be a lot of tree fall. Paddlers should be able to exercise directional control around these sweepers. Complete 25-kilometer route running from Upper Stone Ridge Road Bridge to the Route 105 bridge on the lower river of the Central York Municipal Launch is a full-day paddle and can take 8 to 10 hours. It is tackled in sections by most. And then below that, key highlights. Community, Central York. Root type, signature root. Number of segments, 4. Difficulty level, intermediate. Total distance, 25 kilometers. Seasonal information, all season, spring until late fall.
They give a lot of details, and it helps it break down for, especially if you're new to the sport, if you're new to paddling, kayaking, canoeing, whatever. And if you're wondering, hey, well, I need an idea of what I'm getting into here. Like a lot of more and more experienced people will still look at these details and say, what am I getting into here?
Right.
So it's good for these details.
The Keswick River can be run throughout most of the paddling season, but it can get too shallow late in the summer and in periods of drought. It's best in spring through midsummer or after some rain. In mid to late summer, it can get shallow in places that may require walking a few sections. Lowest section of the river connecting the Wollastook from Route 105 Bridge is accessible all season long. Then it breaks down the route into 5 different parts, so you can then go in to click on each of these parts and see what's in them. Each part has launch description, segment description, difficulty, distance, gems along the way.
Yes.
So things you want to see along the way.
Covered bridges, maybe.
Mm-hmm. You would think. But hold on to that hope, glimmer of hope. So the first section of the Keswick River, this is the one I chose, Upper Stone Ridge Road to Route 104. Launches description. Central York Municipality has established a launch, an Upper Stone Ridge Bridge. The launch is on the north side of the river, just over the bridge, with parking on the right side of the road. Short carry of a few meters brings you to the water's edge. Segment description. This upper stretch sets the tone for the rest of the river. Narrow, meandering, sometimes at a good current. It's full of natural wild beauty. Expect tall grasses and forested areas. This is the most wooded section of the river and good eagle spotting. Overhanging branches give it a majestic feel, but due to sandy banks, there is an occasional tree fall and sweepers. Difficulty. Intermediate due to tree fall, sometimes speedy current, and many twists and turns, no rapids or waterfalls. Distance, 4.5 kilometers.
Rather short.
This section is just 4. So the whole thing is 25, but this one section is 4.5 kilometers. So at least if you're doing it in sections, then you know, okay, well, I can get out and do 4.5 kilometers today, and then next weekend I'll do the next whatever section, right? Gems along the way. Nearby amenities include gas and the pizza shack.
I was expecting more.
That makes two of us. I was going through them. Most of the gems tend to be food related. Like, there's a bakery. There's a cookie shop. There's a gas station convenience store to get snacks and water.
There's an old man that sits on his lawn and yells at you.
Hey, get the hell off my lawn! Yeah. Then you can just go to the next section and read the same sort of things there. So it tells you, describes you what what to expect in each section.
So you're like a merchant on the river. Right. I need to get my baked goods and some berries.
Yes. What can we trade?
I will give you news of the river, and you will sell me bread.
Yeah. I expected, like you say, covered bridge or something like that, right? Something weird along the shoreline or something. But no, there's a pizza shack.
I will admit, when you sent this to me, I when it comes to the details, I just gloss over it. So I hadn't read that part. It's like, what? A pizza shack?
Yeah, and gas.
And why gas? You're in a canoe.
You're in a canoe. Well, burrito. Kayak. It's a burrito. That's the kind of gas you're getting from the pizza shack.
Yes, exactly.
So paddle Wollastook, watershed.ca. Give that one a check out, especially if you're heading to New Brunswick.
Yeah, if you're going to be in the Maritimes. And if you go to I can't remember that. What was the website I sent? It's basically paddlenewbrunswick.com or
something like that. .ca. Yeah.
And so it breaks New Brunswick down into like, I think 10 or 11 different segments, whether it's northern, southern, east, west, whatever. It's all the different sections. And so you click on the website on the map on the segment that you're interested in, and it gives you a list of all the river segments that you can do and gives all the details. So doesn't matter where you are in New Brunswick, you can find all of these river run details, and it goes from like, you know, if you want whitewater, if you want loops and loop back and out, and or if you want to do lake travel, river travel, lazy river, like one of the sections I saw was near Sussex on the Kennebecasis. There's a tubing company, and you can do a float trip for the day type thing, right? So there's lots of stuff to see and do if you're mm-hmm. in New Brunswick, and some of them are just a couple hours. Some of them you can spend like 5-6 days doing. So it's everything's out there, and it's really interesting website, and there's a lot of detail.
And there's some parts that you gotta pay attention to. Tides.
Oh yes, absolutely. So if you're on the anywhere's on the St. John River, like Kennebecasis, St. John River, Wollastook, it's depending how far up the river you are, you will be affected by the tidal changes, because from the Bay of Fundy comes through the reversing falls, mm-hmm. and that small section where the river changes direction through the reversing falls, it affects most of the lower river system. So you invariably have a light saltwater, depending on how far down towards the reversing falls you are, you're going to have a little bit of salty water. So you're going to have different changes. Plus the fact that you don't, you're on a river, you have to be prepared for tidal changes, which is not what most people are prepared for on a river.
Right.
So it's pretty wild. Like growing up, we used to sail with family friends on sailboats, and so the water level, depending on the time of day, is like, oh, the docks are floating higher today than normal. I'm on a river. What's going on? Well, it's New Brunswick. You're on the St. John River. It's near the Bay Fundy. It's affected by the tides. Some of the highest tides in the world. And so it becomes very interesting. It's one of the things that I took for granted growing up, and now that I've been in Ontario, it's like, that's kind of weird. You don't think about that anymore and then be reminded.
Until you get out there.
It's like, oh yeah, tides, oh, right? Yeah, something you have to take into consideration on the lower sections.
Yeah. But if you're in New Brunswick, you got to take your canoe with you.
Oh, yeah.
Your kids will love
it. Well, no, we would. I'm not going to drive all the way across Ontario, Quebec, and New Brunswick with a canoe on my roof. I'll rent one down there.
Have to rent two. Take your whole family out.
18-footer, two kids in the middle. Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go enjoy. I expect pictures.
It could be interesting because we are looking for something extra to do because we don't want to just hang out with family.
I just gave you something to do.
I know.
See? I expect pictures.
I might do the Kesler
from the pizza shack.
From the pizza shack. Hey, I found the pizza shack.
I found the pizza shack, man. Speaking of traveling, the Great Pacific Migration.
Ah, yes. And so we've kind of covered a little bit of this in
parts, sort of.
Sort of. Yeah. But it's originated in the same spot, but it was...
Everything originated in this spot, it seems. Yeah. And then it goes different ways from there. So a group of indigenous Taiwanese seafarers have completed a daring quest, braving choppy waters, using the stars for navigation, as they paddled a traditional wooden canoe to the Philippines, in a journey that highlights the astonishing feat of human migration across the Pacific. Taiwan's indigenous people, who nowadays make up a tiny portion of the island's population, are believed to be the ancestors of many of the groups who came to inhabit land stretching from Hawaii to Easter Island in the Eastern Pacific to Madagascar off the coast of East Africa. Like, they went everywhere. Give them a boat, and they're just traveling everywhere.
And it makes sense for Taiwan, being an island nation, there's a lot of seafaring people. And so over the millennia, there's going to be a lot of seafaring technology, mm-hmm. navigation, wondering, well, how do I get where? And so you discover more and more as you get out doing more and more fishing. So it makes sense that they are a seafaring nation.
Yeah. They share genetic and linguistic links and the navigational skills of their forebears, who traveled extraordinary distances in primitive vessels, successfully finding their way to tiny land masses, and is considered one of the great migrations in human history. So back June 15th this month, 60 Tao people from Taiwan's Orchid Island set off on a 111-mile voyage, taking turns to paddle against strong currents and to reach the Ivatan people in the Batanes Islands, located in the far north of the Philippines, replicating a journey first thought to have been made more than 4,000 years ago.
Incredible.
They were welcomed by drum and dance performances when they arrived the following day. There were 60 people that did it, but they took in turns of 20. Tatahala is a traditional 20-seat wooden plank boat, about 12 meters long. So they did it in shifts sort of thing. This is not only a significant day for the Pacific Ocean, but also a day of commemoration for the Austronesian people. Maros, chairperson of the Taiwan's Indigenous People's Cultural Foundation, says, and like many Tao people, goes by a single name. The journey is meant to revive a sea route not used for 300 years, and one that in the past could have been considered nearly impossible. Given the lack of maps and the crude vessels early navigators of the Bashi Channel once used. But that's like the Vikings as well. They didn't have maps to cross the vast oceans to get to England. All that's in the Newfoundland and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
Greenland, Iceland, Newfoundland, Labrador.
They had to figure it out themselves. Yeah. Right.
And it's easy enough to, I say easy enough, but they were navigating by sun and stars. Mm-hmm. So they knew, okay, we're going this direction. And so they knew a directionality, but they didn't know what they're going to come across.
Right.
And maybe later in the later centuries, they had information because people would return with information. This is what we found. And so it's interesting that here on this trip, that they were able to travel that distance this is open ocean in canoes. This is not an easy trip.
Well, even this one that they just did, there was parts where like they were pumping water out. Big time.
But also the fact that without modern technology, you can have reverse osmosis. You can have a hand pump to make fresh water. But back in the day, 300 years ago and 4,000 years ago, and when they're doing this journey. It's all by hand. Yeah. So you're paddling by hand, but also you're hoping for rain so you can collect rainwater, right? And because you can't drink the ocean. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. It'll kill you. And so they're fishermen, right? They're seafarers, so they're going to be catching fish. They have some to eat.
And they'll have some provisions with them as well.
So. Water is the serious problem.
Yeah.
And plus, you have to hang your butt over the edge to go poop every day.
Yeah. More than 200 people from 6 tribal communities took part in making the canoe named Ovayan, or Golden Friendship. Using traditional methods to bind specially cut wood without the need of nails. The Tao people are one of Taiwan's similar indigenous groups with a population of just 5,120, according to government tally, so it's dwindled. Indigenous people account for just 3% of modern Taiwan's 23 million people, but the role they played was crucial in the Great Pacific Migration story. It's absolutely certain the journey began in Taiwan maybe 5,000 years ago. Emeritus Professor of Archaeology Peter Bellwood from Australian National University says, then it spread into the Philippines and then onwards. From there, the group spread further to other places such as Indonesia and Pacific Islands, adding that there was archaeological records and DNA traces to back it up. The Austronesian groups from Taiwan would bring food in their boats during expeditions, including yams and taro, as well as livestock. Without these animals and plants, they couldn't survive in small islands. There were usually women on board too. They had a basic knowledge of astronomy so they could see where they were going, and they could also record maybe where they'd come from and where the direction was to go back home again. Taiwan was also the first traceable point of the passing of many Austronesian languages. More variations of Austronesian languages have been identified in Taiwan, accompanied with more intricate grammatical structures and expansive vocabularies, which has provided insights for linguistics. High-level diversity suggests that Taiwan was the original dispersal of the family. So they go to all these other places, and they can trace some of the linguistic things back to these original Taiwan indigenous group.
Exactly. And so we first covered this. We covered this this migratory thing back in episode 398 when we talked about the seafarers from Taiwan going to Japan and Okinawa. Mm-hmm. And this is back in the Paleolithic era. And so they obviously they've been doing a lot of navigating and seafaring. It's Japan, Okinawa, and now Bataan Island. And hey, did you look at the map where Bataan Island is?
Mm-hmm.
So Bataan Island is actually a smaller, further island than the two that they passed.
Right.
So it's like, we don't like that one.
No, but,
I was looking at images and Google Earth, and you could see the much larger island that they passed had high cliffs. So I think maybe because they were very close to where they ended up on Bataan Island. So maybe they're going, that one's too steep. And Bataan is very coastal, hilly, and so it's not as cliffy, I guess you could say.
Probably had some good beaches.
Yes, good beaches. So I thought that was interesting, the fact that they did travel. It's an incredible endeavor back in the day to, like, it's us thinking going to the moon and Mars back then, mm-hmm. right? So they...
Well, it's sort of like, I mean, looking for the new world.
Exactly.
Right? You get Spain, England, all that. Yeah, they're just explorers with smaller boats.
Yeah, I know. And they had wildlife with them.
Right? Hey, Bill, get your cow. Throw it in the boat. Let's go for a trip. Okay,
Wow. But so it's super interesting to see the early on migratory patterns from the Paleolithic era and where they got to, right? Mm-hmm. It's fascinating.
And the fact that now, 4,000 years later,
from
when they say it first started, 4,000 to 5,000, and then 300 years after they've done this.
Yeah, they stopped 300 years ago. Yeah. I don't know why they just stopped.
So now they're actually saying, you know what? Let's just find out what it was like.
Yeah.
And they rebuilt the boat the same way.
That's amazing.
And did the exact same. It'd be like us building a Voyageur canoe and doing one of the French Voyageur trapper routes.
Exactly. It'd be fascinating. It'd be amazing. I would absolutely do that. Oh.
So that's pretty cool that they were actually able to do that. A couple weeks ago, we talked about the boundary waters crossing, the border crossing. Apparently, the results have been positive for this new telephone reporting system set up at the Canadian border for people that are looking to enter Quetico from boundary waters.
Yep.
Telephone reporting option went live June 8th. Quetico's Cache Bay and Prairie Portage Ranger Stations. Paddlers looking to enter Quetico, as we said, can do so without a remote area border crossing permit, because those no longer. Telephone reporting sites are only active at Quetico Ranger Stations at this point. More spots are becoming mid-September, they say. Meanwhile, people who have to travel between Minnesota and Ontario with any degree of frequency can enroll in the Nexus program. Nexus members may call 30 minutes to 4 hours in advance of their arrival.
But not if you're in a canoe in the middle of nowhere.
Well, that's why they're saying they have to wait till they get to, unless you got a sat phone.
Yeah.
Right? The Nexus is designed to speed up the border cross. I know some people in Windsor and that, they get the Nexus pass.
If you're crossing the border enough, then it makes sense to get the Nexus pass. We did it for our 5 Great Lakes in a day type thing.
We didn't do Nexus.
No. What did we have to do? We had to do some
We just went regular toll road.
Oh, it was the COVID thing. We had to pre-proof the crossing. That's what it was.
Yeah. Nexus membership is valid for 5 years, and there's a $120 non-refundable application processing fee. So if they say, no, you're not valid, you don't get your $120 back.
Wait a sec.
For people who don't plan across the border lakes with any degree of frequency or only when they want to take a trip to Quetico Park via the park's southern entrances, the telephone reporting sites are efficient and extremely easy to use. Someone entering Cache Bay, for example, simply stops at the ranger station, uses a cell phone that is provided on site, checks in with Canadian Customs by providing their passport number, canoe registration number, and basic information about what they plan to do in Canada. So apparently it's, so far people are happy with the results of it.
Yes.
It's working.
So, and I remember in our discussions about it, there was a lot of concern about the cancellation of the seasonal pass thing for crossing. And so they seem to have come up with a happy solution with...
So far, so good. Yeah. And as the season goes on and they expand and add more sites eventually, that sort of thing, that'll all be good. The Midwest. This is something that I've... How do I put this without sounding stupid?
I'll leave that up to you.
I know what the Midwest is, but I don't know that I've ever actually looked on a map.
I don't think I have either.
At the Midwest.
What does Midwest mean? Is it which side of the Rockies is the Midwest?
It'd be there's the west, which is way over by the Rockies, Colorado,
Yeah.
But the Midwest
is the plains.
Like Iowa, Idaho, I guess. Well, it's not North and South Dakota, I don't think so. But Wisconsin is there, Minnesota, Illinois, Iowa,
it's
Michigan.
More central U.S., not Midwest.
Well, that's what I saw today.
It'd be West because I think early on in the 1700s, 1800s, when people started migrating that way, it was like, the West. Go West, young man.
Go West. Well, everything was West at
everything
that point.
Was West. And then they realized there are a series of mountains in the way. And so I think the Midwest is like, it's central, like Upper Canada.
It's not far from us.
Well, think about, we're called Upper Canada.
Well, we were.
But we are so far south of so many states. Like, we are the southern tip
we're
of...
We're like lower Canada now.
The southern tip of Ontario is in California. Like, north... Like,
that.
There's 4 kilometers of... No, or actually, they say 4 miles. There's 4 miles of California that's north of Point Pelee?
Yeah.
No, the very southern tip of Ontario.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's an island off Point Pelee, but
yeah.
Oh,
so,
yeah,
and no, we're Upper Canada.
Yeah,
not so upper.
We're kind of lower now.
Yeah, very much lower. Yeah.
Well, there's 9 Midwest paddling rivers.
Yes.
When it comes to soaking up the dog days of summer, a leisurely float trip is one of the best ways to experience the Midwest's abundant waterways. Here's a list of 9 of the region's best locations to float and paddle with your crew. No gear, no problem. Local outfitters can provide essentials. Just pack your sunscreen, cooler full of your favorite refreshments before heading off to one of these popular destinations. So there's the Niobrara River. If Nebraska is Midwest.
That's a tornado state.
Doesn't conjure up images of serpentine Midwestern waterways. Visit the Niobrara River midsummer and get back to us. A designated quiet trail that's situated in the beautiful sand hills of north central Nebraska. This river has earned a national reputation for its peaceful setting. Its leisurely pace means you won't miss glimpsing 200-plus waterfalls along the way.
Wow.
Where's Gary?
Gary, Indiana?
No, Gary, our buddy who loves chasing waterfalls. The most common route is from Fort Niobrara National Wildlife Refuge Launch Site to Brewer Bridge, both being public access landings. Little Outlaw and Brewers Canoers are 2 of many outfitters located in Valentine, renting canoes, kayaks, tubes, and stock tanks, a Nebraska tradition. Remember the stock tanks? We talked about those.
Yes, tanking. Yes.
So that's Nebraska. The Root River of Minnesota. Maybe called the land of 10,000 lakes, but the state's rivers have much to offer, too. Though there are plenty to choose from, a float trip down the Root River rewards with charming towns and bluff views along the way. The water propels floaters at a leisurely to moderate pace, and they can wave to anglers casting their lines for the river's bounty. Plan a day trip floating along the river or utilize the many campsites for a multi-day journey. Check out Root River Outfitters in Lanesboro for kayaks, tubes, canoes, and nearby river access.
Mm-hmm. North and South Dakota are considered Midwest.
Are they Midwest?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're right there. They're right
above. I knew they were right this side, but I don't know if they were considered. I didn't know if they were considered Midwest or West.
Mm-hmm. They are Midwest. According to the U.S. Census Bureau.
Oh, like we trust them?
We have to. They're government agency.
If anybody's going to know, I guess. Merrimack River. Stretching for more than 200 miles through the Ozarks, the Merrimack River is one of the longest free-flowing rivers in Missouri. Its most popular sections for float trips are between Merrimack Spring and Merrimack State Park. While the river's headwaters are near Salem, most of the outfitters are located in Steelville. Rent a raft, canoe, kayak, or tube from local businesses like Lucky Clover or Merrimack River Resort. While floating, cliffs, caves, and soothing springs usher you through one of the most beautiful sections of the Show Me State. Along the way, tie up your vessel and make a pit stop at Merrimack Caverns for a tour of a natural Midwest wonder.
Hmm.
Missouri's not that far.
No, it's not. It's not. Well, it's. I guess from us, it's the same distance to Nebraska. But they do touch borders with Nebraska.
See? Upper Iowa River. Guess where that is?
Next to Nebraska?
It's in the Midwest.
It's in the Midwest, yes.
Of all the places to drift in the Midwest, the driftless area of northeast Iowa might be the coolest. This remarkable region is a veritable oasis left untouched when glaciers flattened much of the area about 12,000 years ago. It was one of the first rivers in the nation to be nominated as a National Wild and Scenic River in the 1960s. You rent gear from an outfitter like Upper Iowa Resort in Dorchester or Harvest Farm Campground in Cresco. Enjoying the Upper Iowa River as it meanders past towering limestone bluffs, surprising waterfalls, secluded hardwood forests, and historic bridges, which, going back to the last topic, would have been a gem to see along the way.
Yes, exactly, and not a Pizza Hut.
The 156-mile river originates near Leroy, Minnesota, flows into the Mississippi River near New Albion, Iowa. The Apple River. This 77-mile-long tributary of the St. Croix River in Wisconsin offers the best of both worlds. The journey kicks off with a gentle current before transitioning to livelier rapids to thrill more adventurous types. In the middle, a substantial sandbar always seems to host a spirited beach volleyball match and picnickers. Check out outfitters in and around Somerset like River's Edge Apple River Tubing and Camping for Rentals. Looking for more unique experience? Try tanking. The tubing alternative in which you float down a river in a 500-gallon stock tank.
That's wild.
That's in Wisconsin. How come John Van Berger never told us about tanking
I know. In Wisconsin? I wonder if he's ever done it.
Disappointed. Affectionately called Tippy by locals, the Tippecanoe River in northern Indiana derives its name from a Miami Indian word for buffalo fish. Cruise its glassy waters and admire historic structures as well as an amazing spectrum of biodiversity, including bluebreast, gilt, and spotted and Tippecanoe darters, which are all fish. 182 miles river flows from Crooked Lake and joins the Wabash River near Lafayette. Many of the river's outfitters, like Riverside Rentals, are located less than 5 miles south of Tippecanoe River State Park in Winnemac.
Hmm. A lot of names of places is hard to pronounce, unless you're from there.
Exactly. Chippewa River. These are getting closer and closer.
I know, we're getting into Michigan now.
Gentle currents and scenic views abide along the Chippewa River, easily accessible via the aptly named town of Mount Pleasant in central Michigan. The 4-mile-per-hour current is the perfect pace, and the cool, clear water provides a pleasant relief from Midwest heat. The river passes through the region's natural woodlands, but also through Mount Pleasant's residential neighborhoods and urban parks. So as you're floating along, people can throw stuff at you. Just outside of town, both Buckley's Mountainside Canoes and Chippewa River Outfitters rent gear for a fun day on the river. Getting close. The Fox River. For a Midwest waterway that flows right through many cities, try the Fox River in Illinois. This 200-mile-plus stream starts in southwestern Wisconsin, runs through Illinois communities like Elgin, St. Charles, Aurora, Oswego, and Yorkville. For a paddle sport adventure beginning in North Aurora, try Howling Wolf Canoe and Kayak. And then, number 9, Cuyahoga River.
Oh, I heard about that one. There's a Cuyahoga Raceway.
Yeah, but the Cuyahoga River has caught on fire
13
times.
Yes.
The biggest one being back in 1969 is the one where they finally took notice that there might be an issue.
We made a change. Need some rules.
Yeah, the first 12 times didn't quite clue them in, but that 13th time.
Yeah, there you go.
Not many Midwest rivers run through two major cities and 25 miles of national park. But the Cuyahoga River has it all. 100-mile waterway starts near Hamden and runs south to Akron, and then back through Cleveland, feeding into Lake Erie. Along the way, travelers will pass the rolling hills, vast forests, lush farmland of Cuyahoga Valley National Park. Start your paddling journey at Cuyahoga Valley Adventures in Akron to explore the end of the river in Cleveland with Great Lakes water sports. So these are, like I say, I've never really actually till now opened up Google Maps and said, where's the Midwest?
Yes.
Boom, right there. It makes sense, of course. Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, but it Midwest cuts out, so it's...
I've been in the majority of the states of the Midwest,
yes,
too.
Yes, me too. And so the southern Midwest are Kansas, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio. Northern ones are across the Canadian border, but it's North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska. So you got the North, South Dakota, you got the Dakotas, plus...
I haven't been to Kansas.
I've been... through it, I think. Never stopped.
I've heard them on the radio.
I've seen it in the movies.
Yeah, Kansas is the only one I've never been to.
Mm-hmm.
We went camping in North and South Dakota when we lived in Saskatchewan. We went across the border, went zipping down there. But yeah. So some of these places aren't that far from us.
No.
Not that long of a drive.
Well, Canada borders the Midwest, a lot of the Midwest states, right? And we're there, right there, Michigan, Wisconsin. We've been there, those two states, so many times.
Iowa, Illinois, Indiana.
Yeah.
Those are just like that's the thing is, when you cross, if you're crossing at Windsor, you're either going west towards like Wisconsin, Illinois, like Chicago, stuff like that, or Michigan.
Yeah.
But then if you instead just head south, you got like Ohio and all that sort of stuff down there.
Yes.
So none of this stuff is all that far away. It's all reachable like in a day or so. And it looks like there's like a lot of perfect places here for some of that lazy, just great floating paddling stuff.
I want to do tanking.
I want to do tanking. Just we can each get our own tank.
Didn't we... There was a tanking adventure on a river somewheres where you could bring your rifle and you could target practice as you floated down the river. Did I not see that?
No, it was me saying you should do that.
No.
Oh, there you could. But yeah, I said it would be a new Olympic sport.
There you go. Yeah.
Just start bringing rifles in. All of a sudden, boom, up comes the target. Boom. That'd be awesome. Because I say what they do is they have the tanks with seats.
Yes.
And there's beer. So you can just float down the river drinking beer, sitting in your seat, shooting just relaxing. And I said, well, just throw some guns in there and some targets. And you got yourself something, a whole new recreation.
What are we going to eat on this trip? Well, it's either going to be squirrels
or whatever else we shoot.
Fish or squirrels.
Places like these ones we mentioned in the Midwest, those are great for people who want to try paddling for the first time or getting your kids involved, that sort of stuff. Because a lot of them, they do sound just like there's some nice, calm, floating, not, you know, class 4 rapids.
Yeah, it's family adventures and fun.
Yeah. So, 9 rivers in the Midwest.
Very cool.
Niobrara, Root, Meramec, Upper Iowa, the Apple River, Tippecanoe River, Chippewa River, Fox River, and the all-fiery Cuyahoga River. Give them a whirl.
Or go to New Brunswick, where it's all trees.
Where it's all trees.
Nothing. Low population, lots of trees.
Right? It's not as people-y there.
No, not as people-y.
That's all I got this week.
It was a good episode. I had fun.
Yeah, it's lots of talking about different rivers and lots of big words places we don't know.
Yeah.
But no, it's nice. And this isn't the first time when you're talking about the new map thing, online map. There's a lot of places starting to do stuff like that, and all in efforts to get people out there.
Yes,
because everybody's got their phones, everybody's got their laptops or computer, whatever. Let's click this. Let's see what's all available. And while you've got the tab open on what's going down the Keswick River,
yeah,
you can have Google Maps open next to it. And zoom in on different things. That's not right. But, oh, over here, what's over here? Oh, this is on their list.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. So,
And when municipalities and, like, for Fredericton in Brunswick, in their capital region, for them to go out and put the efforts in to produce maps and trip reports and trip routes and so on, it really spreads, like... It's sort of like a tourist in your own town. Anybody who does these routes or stops, does anything along the routes, you're spreading tourism dollars everywhere. And so that just, it lifts everything up in the area because you're going to be buying gas or food or snacks or renting canoes or kayaks or, you know, so it makes sense that a government agency would encourage people to come out and enjoy what's there. And it's also, it's one of those, it does a secondary thing, is that like the more people use it, the more people are aware of it, the more people are going to be interested in protecting it.
Right.
So if you ignore it, then again, it's like, well, until it starts catching on fire, then it's...
the first 12 times.
So it's good that agencies and towns and cities are promoting these outdoor activities because we need more of it. We need more people to appreciate what we do.
Do you want to get people outdoors and enjoy what's already there?
Mm.
Or do you want to have to spend a couple million dollars building a new rec center?
Yeah.
Or a new pool.
Let's do some laser tag.
Right? Yeah. Which would you rather? I'd rather be natural, promoting something like natural resources.
See some eagles and some beavers and
that sort of thing. Great. Yeah. So as long as that happens.
Mm-hmm.
You got anything else?
I do not.
I'm trying to think. There's something else. I think it was just about Ariana and her friends paddling in Japan.
Yeah. I just had that signman, the bridge signman paddle guy.
Yeah. Because when we research, there's so many things that go.
I know. There's tiny little things by that we come across.
Well, I will say on the bright side, this week, while doing all the research... This is probably one of the lowest weeks of water disasters.
Oh, yes. Like, I did read a few.
I think there was two people that one person drowned and another person got swept out somewhere. That was it. Usually there's like 10.
Dozens, yeah.
Right? It's just to have a couple, it's like felt weird that I was missing something.
Yeah. So we normally don't bring that stuff because we want to stay happy and good stories. But I guess it's a high point that there's fewer people that died in the last week.
Yes. Huzzah! All righty. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us on our website at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And you can stream or download all our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Player FM, Podbean, Amazon Music, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com. You can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.